This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Kidnappers, a volunteer-based community access station. For more information, go to www.radiokidnappers.org.nz. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this program available through funding the Access Internet Radio Project.
There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium, europium, zirconium, lutetium, vanadium, and lanthanum, and osmium, and astatine, and radium, and gold, and protactinium, and indium, and gallium, and iodine, and thorium.
You're listening to Radio Kidnappers, the voice of Hawke's Bay, and I'm Lynn Trafford, presenting on behalf of the Hawke's Bay branch of the Royal Society of New Zealand, Hawke's Bay Scientists on Air. This program is your opportunity to get to know practicing and recently retired scientists from around the bay. With me in the studio, I have Jeff Cook, Data Coordinator with the Resource Management Group at the Hawke's Bay Regional Council, based right here in Napier. From his first employment in the UK and onto Hawke's Bay via Palmerston North, from the UK's nuclear industry to web mapping in Napier, today we will learn how and why Jeff Cook made these career-changing leaps. We welcome Jeff Cook to Radio Kidnappers and to Hawke's Bay Scientists on Air. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
Nice to have you with us in the studio today. Now, you're not a local Hawke's Bay boy. Whereabouts are you from in the UK?
Originally from Grimsby on the east coast, and then moved up to Cumbria on the west coast, just below Scotland.
Uh-huh. Where did you do your primary and secondary schooling then, in the south or in the north?
Kind of in the middle. So.
In the middle. All right, in the middle. Whereabouts did you go to secondary school?
Secondary school was near Grimsby, small town near Grimsby.
All right. When you were at school, Jeff, was there a defining moment or something that happened at school that made you decide that science was going to be the career for you? Was there a time?
I can't think of a defining time. I had an interest in maths and physics and chemistry, just a general interest in learning things and science, really.
Uh-huh. And so that, to study those kinds of things or to work in fields associated with those kinds of subjects, you really do have to go to university, don't you?
Yes.
So where did you go?
I went to Sheffield in its central England, I guess.
Yes, it is, isn't it? Well-known industrial town, I think, Sheffield is. Whenabouts did you go to university?
Early 90s.
Okay, all right, early 90s. So off you go to Sheffield. And what were you going to study?
I studied chemistry.
Chemistry.
Pure chemistry.
Pure chemistry. What on earth did you think you were going to do with that when you got to the end of a chemistry degree?
Before I went to university, I'd taken a year out and worked up in Cumbria and doing laboratory work and on-site industrial work and enjoyed it and hoped to get into something similar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what ended up happening initially, at least.
Okay, so off you go. You study chemistry. You're there doing a BSc. You do that for a certain number of times. And then it's time to start looking for that first job that's going to set your career onto a defining path. Who did you go and work with?
I worked with, my initial job was with the Atomic Energy Authority in Cumbria. They were the people that I'd worked with prior to university and during the university holidays, and they offered me the job, so I took it.
I think that's a pretty whipty-do. And what is even more whipty-do for us is that with all the scientists that I have interviewed on Hawke's Bay Scientist on Air, you are the very first one who has worked in the nuclear industry. And in New Zealand, we kind of, our knees go all jelly-like when we actually say the word nuclear. So I'm going to ask you a little bit about your job today, in so much as the bits you can tell us about it, just so that people who are listening can hear how you work in this industry in the UK. Can you explain first what AEA technology, what happens there, and what kind of people work there? What are they doing?
So AEA was a, I guess it was a commercial arm of what was originally the government nuclear industry. So initially they'd the government power generation and nuclear research had been under the United Kingdom Authority, Atomic Energy Authority, and AEA Technology split off from that as a commercial arm. And the other group that was in the in that area was British Nuclear Fuels, which was the main generation side, if you like, and we were more on the research side. The people that worked there was a mix of scientists and, I guess, operations support for those scientists, all the people you needed to keep the facilities running to allow them to do the research or to do the investigations into the materials. So initially the work I was in was laboratory analysis and on-site sampling for decommissioning support, which was...
Okay, now stop here. Laboratory analysis. What sorts of things are you analysing and what are you specifically looking for?
So we were analysing a variety of things, usually either materials from buildings and chemical plant to see how radioactive they were and where we could, where they could be disposed or what potential cleanup options were for them. So that ranged from brickwork, concrete, steel to sludges that were in tanks, and we had to characterize them and work out what may be able to do with them or what couldn't be done with them.
So that's what you were doing in the laboratory. What other roles did you have there? Because you had that work, but you were doing other things as well, weren't you? You were there for, overall, I guess, almost a decade of your life. What sorts of things happened to you there?
So we also spent a bit of time doing investigation into new techniques for examining components from reactors and deploying those, and then from that I moved into what would probably be, we called it operation support, which was keeping the building and keeping the facilities running. So being a nuclear environment, there's, you can't just go in and fix things, so you kind of have to work out how you're going to clean things up to go, and if a crane breaks down or if you need to get rid of anything, how you're going to do that. So that was working with the engineers, electricians, the fitters and everyone on the ground to work out how to do things and then what we were going to do. And there was still some, I guess, the analysis in there as well. So working when we had things we weren't expecting, trying to work out what they were and what we could do with them.
Things you weren't expecting. That sounds really bad.
It was more just if we got high results on some waste that we were sending out of the building. Yeah. We had to work out whether it was a true high reading based on what we're expecting to be in there, or yes, whether there were unexpected contaminants in there that were causing problems, and then we could potentially remove those and get make it easier to get the waste out.
Were you involved with health and safety processes at this facility?
I was involved with, well, health and safety for the people working there. I mean, it was a critical part of it, and ended up being a radiation protection supervisor. So looking after, doing some training for new starters on what basically what it was all about, what to be worried about, what not to be worried about, with, and what the rules were for working with radioactive substances in a radioactive environment.
You wouldn't go and work there if you were really worried, would you?
Probably not.
No, it
took a while to get your head around what was... It's a different way of working.
Yes, I'm sure so. Did you enjoy working there?
I did. It was constant challenges and nothing was, or rarely was anything straightforward. So what would be really easy if you could put your hands on something, doing it remotely so you can't, builds a whole lot of challenges into it.
A lot of learning, I would think.
Yeah, there was. And it was also stuff that people either hadn't done before or hadn't looked at doing for a long time. A lot of the time it was constantly new things that we had to try and work out how to do.
So you're keeping an industry current, really, I presume? We've had nuclear energy for a long time, haven't we?
We have. Some of the work we're doing was around, as I said, reactor components, so making sure that they were standing up to the rigours of a reactor. Yes. And some of it was also around the decommissioning, so taking down and dismantling old nuclear facilities. And that was, no one had done it before. So you're learning as you go. And because the facilities had been built over a long period of time, there were things that had been done back in the 50s that you wouldn't do in modern day.
No.
And that gave us a whole lot of challenges and headaches dealing with those.
Well, we only think of nuclear energy when something goes wrong, don't we? Like it did in Russia or more recently in Japan with the tsunami. At some stage through all this, you must have decided that coming to New Zealand was a good thing to do. It's a huge leap, really. Why did you decide to come to New Zealand?
It was almost by accident in a way. I wanted to travel, and the visas for New Zealand and Australia for working holiday visas, they only allowed you to do that until you were 30. So there was a time element in there. I applied and got the visas and worked out a trip to South America and then came to New Zealand following that and ended up staying for 12 months, really enjoying it, and in the end emigrating.
So you didn't really come here with a view to staying, you just came here with a view to having a nice working holiday.
Yeah, I came to travel and then really enjoyed it, enjoyed the lifestyle, and there was an opportunity, so took it.
And you ended up working in Palmerston North.
That was the first job when I came over, yes. Ended up working for a polystyrene panel company, doing some project management and for the construction of cool stores and that kind of thing, which was totally different to the UK, but I'd done project management before, so there were some relevant skills that worked through.
And then you went to Horizons Regional Council, which is based in Palmerston North, but it's the regional council for the greater Manawatu area, isn't it?
Yeah, and it goes all the way up to Taumarunui, by the mountain.
It's a big area, actually.
It is.
Horizons, it takes the whole of that centre of the North Island, the sweep right across there. Very big area. What were you doing there?
I was working in environmental compliance, so we were effectively, they refer to us as the policemen for the resource management, the resource consents, making sure that people who've got consents are doing what they're supposed to be doing. Initially, was a lot of dairy discharge work, and then moved into the industrial area and sewage treatment plants. Because of my background with industry, I was comfortable in those environments. And a background in chemistry helped as well.
Of course. I would think you'd be a huge asset to Horizons. But at some stage, Hawke's Bay beaconed.
Did
that happen by accident, or was that a purposeful move?
It was a mixture of the two. There was an opportunity came over here, and I decided to try for it and ended up moving over. And, yeah, it was good. It's a different set of challenges and issues. There's a lot less discharges to water in Hawke's Bay than there are in...
Yes, there are lots down there, aren't there? There's huge areas of dairy farming and I suppose sheep farming as well, but predominantly dairy.
And also a lot of the town sewage goes into, or treated town sewage goes into rivers in the Horizons yes. region, whereas it's very few do here.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more water and irrigation here than there is in the Horizons area.
Yeah, and Horizons have got those ongoing issues always with people like Fonterra and their dairy factories and slaughterhouses and things like that. Quite interesting issues and problems you must have come across compared to what you were analysing back home before you came out here. Interesting times for you, I'm sure. Let's just straddle this period between Horizons and Hawke's Bay Regional Council. It gave you the opportunity to go back to school, didn't it?
It did. I, before starting with Horizons, I'd had a couple of interviews, but my resource management knowledge, I felt, let me down. So I did Open Polytechnic study in environmental management, and then once I'd finished a qualification there, did some study through Massey University for a postgraduate diploma, and that was more in the, there was more science involved with the postgraduate diploma area.
Was it good going back to school?
It's,
I guess it's past time, I guess, isn't
it's
it?
Hard because you're working as well.
Yeah,
so you've got
to fit it in.
Yeah, it makes it harder. It was, some things were easier because you could fit projects that were relevant to work sometimes, but it's harder just with the time. It's quite a commitment.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is a commitment, but you were so lucky to have Massey on your doorstep, really.
I was when I was at Palmerston.
Really good. And then you came up here and you continued on with that study, but you were able to put some of the issues that were going on in Hawke's Bay into that study.
Yeah, I did some of the research, or one of the research papers I did, I tried to look at nutrient flow relationships in the Tuckituckee River, trying to work on some research that had been done in the UK to see if it was applicable here. And I've also done a hydrogeology paper, which was also on the Tuckituckee, the catchment there, because it was also relevant. It was at the time plan change was going through, so there was a lot of resource available, and it made it a lot easier to do the study on that catchment.
And instantly able to apply, which is really good, isn't it? What you were learning was able to be applied, so useful sort of scientific study.
Yeah, and I was still in compliance at the time, so it was useful as well to be able to use some of the techniques to help assess some of the consents.
So, when you joined the Regional Council here, which was in August 2010, as an environmental compliance officer, you were part of a team that was looking at the whole of the regional council area, which, again, is quite vast, perhaps not as vast as Horizons, but it's a long area, isn't it, from way up in the north to way down in the south, so to speak.
Yeah.
What are we covering in this area? Where do we go to and from?
We go from just above Mahia down to, I guess it's the coast, just below Waipukarau,
yeah,
and out to the ranges and just beyond. There are some of the catchment goes over. It's easier to access from the Taupo side than it is from our side. So it's, quite
an area. It's a big area, isn't it? It takes quite a while to travel it, I know. On that particular coverage, were there varieties of consents, or was what was happening really in one part of our area much the same as what was happening in another?
There's a variety of consents, and there's pockets of different types of consents, but there's a lot of similarities. It's just different issues across the region.
Did we get much pollution across there as far as your compliance is concerned? Did you hit pollution?
I wasn't working a lot on the discharge consents. I was, quite a few of mine were water take consents and irrigation, and I had a few industry consents that I was working on. There's a variety. Most people generally complying. I was also doing some pollution response work, and that you always find there are always complaints that you have to investigate, and there's always some things are happening that need to be investigated and then sorted out.
We also bandy about this phrase, contaminated site assessment. We always bandy that about, and it means something to us here. Did you find yourself smiling at the use of contaminated site compliance? Did you find yourself smiling when you thought of the work that you were doing back home?
To some degree, it's a different type of contamination.
And I should hope so. Jeff, I should hope so. 100%. No comparison, really. Just interesting that you should be doing that kind of work in a nuclear facility, and then out you come out here and you end up in a rural farming sort of environment and you're looking at contaminated sites.
Were. It's actually easier in the nuclear industry.
Is it?
Because the radiation travels, so you can pick it up with the instrumentation. It's a lot easier.
I love that. That's wonderful, Jeff. That'll go down in history as one of my favourite lines, I'm sure. After being with the Council for Wee While, they changed you into, or you may probably change yourself, into the role of a data coordinator. So in July 2014, you took on this role after a period of IT support anyway for the compliance team, I understand. So what is a data coordinator at the Regional Council, and what do you do in that sort of role?
It's mainly about trying to improve how we're storing our data and make it more accessible, both internally but also making it accessible externally as well. So the goals to have more data more readily available and more available for public or for researchers without us needing...
Just a minute. What is the data? What is this? What have you collected? What is it that you're trying to store?
Most of the stuff we're looking at the moment is stuff that's been gathered by the Regional Council science team. So they go out and monitor the river water quality, river flow levels, groundwater quality and groundwater levels, air quality, soils, and moving towards trying to make that more readily available. And it's part of a national framework as well. So there's Land and Water Aotearoa Lawa is a summary web page where all the regional councils are providing the same data, and it can be compared or viewed at a national scale, as well as what we're doing at a local scale that we're working to make more available as well.
So who collects this data? You have a team of technicians, do you, at the council that collects this data?
I don't personally. There is a team of the technicians and scientists go out. And say there's the coastal monitoring, bathing beach monitoring as well. So for swimmability of rivers in summer, they're monitoring that as well.
So we do read about this from time to time in the paper, don't we? There's some interesting projects that you have worked on whilst you've been doing this. The collection of the data, are we using all the modern tools that are available to us, or do we still rely very much on people going out and visiting farms and beaches and areas? Is it still people-orientated?
It's a mixture of the two. Where it's possible to cost-effectively and reliably gather the data with modern instrumentation, then that's used. But there's still a lot that relies on people collecting samples or making visual observations. And even, in those situations, we're moving more towards electronic gathering the information, so using tablets to collect instead of paper forms, and
very good
digital cameras instead of pure visual observation.
Makes it more reliable and easier for you to process, I suppose. When you get those instruments back, it's easier for you to download.
It is, although it has its own challenges as well, because there's more information there, so you've got more storage requirements,
and thus it goes on. So the future is looking bright for our data collection team?
It seems to be. Yep.
Plenty for them to still be collecting and for you to be using to help people who live in Hawke's Bay and in New Zealand cope more with what the future has to offer?
Yeah, there's, as we're hopefully able to bring more data more readily available, then people will be able to use it for other purposes as well. So yeah, it's early days, but it's getting there.
We're getting there. It's great to hear that, Jeff. Also, this year you joined the Hawke's Bay branch of the Royal Society, so we're pleased to have you as one of our team, a different team for you, and it's lovely to have you as one of those. So, on behalf of the Hawke's Bay branch of the Royal Society of New Zealand and of Radio Kidnappers, thank you, Jeff Cook, for being my guest on Hawke's Bay Scientists on Air. To find out more about the variety of employment within our regional councils here in New Zealand, the best way to start is with a Google search. Similarly, to find out more about the Royal Society in New Zealand or in the Bay, start by visiting our websites. Please join me on Monday mornings at 9:30 to meet another practicing or recently retired Hawke's Bay scientist. I'm Lynn Trafford.
This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Kidnappers, a volunteer-based community access station. For more information, go to www.radiokidnappers.org.nz. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this program available through funding the Access Internet Radio Project.